Good afternoon. I would like to call into order the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development this Friday, February 20th, 2015, our first Friday meeting of the session. And delighted that you're all here on this beautiful Friday afternoon.
So are we.
First thing I'm going to do is open a work session on committee bills.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, I move that LC-3240 dated 1-27-15 be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Bence moves that LC-3240 dated 1-27-15 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion?
This measure is on OLS. It's been on OLS since this morning, so it's there if anybody would like to peruse that or take a look at that. So public's had access to that for several hours. So.
All right. Is there any objection? If not, the measure is introduced as a committee bill. And I will close the work session on that note. The next item on our agenda, we have two informational briefings this morning, or this afternoon. The first on activities of the Oregon Transportation Forum. And I would like to call to the dais Craig Campbell, Drew Hagedorn, and Randy Tucker. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today. I know a great deal of work has gone into this process from people all over the state, and we appreciate you being here to tell us about the process and what the outcome of that that lengthy process was. In any order that you choose.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell, and I'm here as president of the Oregon Transportation Forum. I'm going to start us off by giving some background. I know that some of you actually were actively involved in the process that we've gone over through the last 18 months to develop a transportation funding proposal to bring before you today. By way of background, the Oregon Transportation Forum originally was the Oregon Highway Users Alliance. We reconstituted our structure back in 2009.
Thank you.
As we were dealing with the Jobs and Transportation Act of 2009, because we realized that we were no longer in a position transportation-wise to have a conversation that's focused purely on highway funding. It really needed to be much broader, dealing with transportation funding in general, including all modes and land use and environmental issues as well. To that purpose, we reconstitute our board of directors so that now we have representatives of all modes on that board, along with a representative from local government, from the environmental community, and from the land use community. And we kept one of our traditions, which is the forum, which is now designed to be a place where people are dealing with transportation issues can come together to have a very broad discussion to try to come to consensus on issues. However, when it comes to taking formal positions on issues, we must have a majority vote of the members of our organization when they meet in their membership meetings as a whole, followed by a unanimous agreement by vote of the board. That means that no mode, no government entity, or the land use or environmental community can be run over by the rest. What we have before you today is discussion about the recommendations that we have developed after meeting for the last 18 months, where we had four different meetings where we hashed out various issues and finally met last November, where a group of about 70 of us unanimously supported the proposal we're going to be bringing forward to you. And then our board unanimously supported those recommendations as well. I'm going to turn it over to my two colleagues to go through the details of the proposal. I will point out one thing at this point in time. There is a legislative council draft that has been developed that is designed to capture the elements of the proposal as we developed it. And then after they're done explaining the details, I'm going to come back and kind of explain to you what our expectations are for the next step. So with that, I'll turn it over to my two colleagues.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. Randy Tucker, I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, the regional government of the Portland metropolitan area. However, I'm here today wearing my hat as treasurer on the board of the Oregon Transportation Forum. I guess board member. Treasurer doesn't matter unless you want to join.
nice pitch. Wow. Nicely done. Very subtle.
Right, right. I would call your attention to your hymnals today. Page 3 is where we're going to be. But before I get there, I think it is worth pointing out this green bar on page 1 down the left side, because really we represent, I think, the full range of transportation interests. Maybe not every single member of the transportation interest, but certainly the full range of those who speak to you on a regular basis about transportation funding and policy. And so I'm really pleased to be here representing this organization. It's a great organization, and we've had a really good year.
So,
Representative Lively.
So I just have a question about that. So those members, I mean, I've never quite understood how they get to be members or who can. Can anybody become a member that's in one of those groups?
Madam Chair, Representative Lively, we're open to anyone who is interested to join us. In fact, during this process, we opened it beyond our membership so that even those who were not members but were interested in transportation discussions were welcome at the table.
However, only members actually get to vote on policy decisions of the organization. And what you have before you, this policy proposal, represents the first time the Oregon Transportation Forum has taken a policy position on legislation.
And Mr. Tucker, could you give us a sense of how long has the Transportation Forum been in existence?
2009 was the creation of this group, as Craig explained a minute ago. However, before that, the sort of predecessor is the Oregon Highway Users Alliance, and I actually don't know how long that group was in existence.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that organization was established, I believe, in the late 1950s, so it's been around for a very long time.
A long storied history.
Yes.
Thank you.
In the time that I've been in this building, which has been since, oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Lively. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hack.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a quick question. I noticed that not many of our smaller communities or rural communities are really represented here. Especially those on the east side of our state, and I don't see many in my district either. So can you tell us a little bit about how you do reach out? Did you try to recruit those folks and they just chose not to participate, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Hack, those organizations, rural communities tend to be represented by the Associated Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities who are there. Mostly those smaller communities don't have the funding that allow them to pay our dues to become members. They're certainly welcome, and we tried to do a lot of outreach as we started the process to try to include folks from throughout the state. Always a challenge, especially when you're on the east side of the mountains or when you're south, when you have meetings that don't actually reach out to those locations, it's difficult for you to participate. So for the most part, they've participated through proxy of those organizations.
I have one follow-up.
Yes,
what is the cost to one of the, what's the cost to
participate? I guess that's a question for the treasurer.
I think that's appropriate, Mr. Tucker.
Madam Chair, Representative Hack, the cost to join the Oregon Transportation Forum is $375 a year, or there's a discount for 2 years, $600 for 2 years. So before we became the Oregon Transportation Forum, the Oregon Highway Users Alliance, and even in the early years of the Oregon Transportation Forum, it really has been a place for conversations, for meeting with legislators, hearing their thoughts, but not for lobbying them. It's just been a place for sharing ideas, sharing information. Since we became the Oregon Transportation Forum, we've actually come up with a couple of policy proposals. This is the only one that has been unanimously adopted by a decision of the membership and the board. But we also did a fair amount of work a couple of years ago, and that work will continue, I think, on multimodal transportation and trying to think of ways to provide a sustainable ongoing funding source for non-highway investments. And so while that work is not represented in the proposal before you today, it's an ongoing conversation, as you probably are well aware.
And I may mention I was a participant in the rail funding task force that occurred, I'm thinking it must be 5 years ago now, maybe four. And I know Representative Lively and I both spent a number of afternoons attending the Transportation Forum meetings and found it incredibly valuable for me particularly, who comes from a particular geographic area of the state, to be very well educated on issues that impact the rest of the state. So it's a very valuable opportunity for legislators to learn a lot about transportation.
Representative Lively was
there. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Sure. So with that, I'd like to call your attention to page 3 of the brochure in front of you, which summarizes in relatively succinct form compared to the actual thing we adopted, the proposal that we are bringing to you this session. And I'm going to trade off a little bit with Mr. Hagedorn here as we walk you through it. Just to orient you to how we did the work, we actually broke into 3 substantive work groups. Two of them are based on, they're structured after the ODOT Fix It and Enhance programs, and those are essentially multimodal. ODOT has recently created this Fix It program and the Enhance program, and if I describe this wrong, somebody will correct me. Basically, okay. They are multimodal pots of money that are intended to address the need to maintain and operate the system versus the need to expand and, the system with new facilities. So about 3/4 of the money that ODOT has in those 2 pots is in the fix-it pot and about 1/4 in the enhance pot. We decided that was a good structure for our conversation, and so we created a fix-it group, an enhance group, and then a 3rd sort of catch-all group that was called I chaired it. I'm trying to remember. It was the on innovation, policy, efficiency, and integration, I believe. And we generated a number of ideas that are included here, and it doesn't really matter what group they came from. Here they are. So I'm going to talk to you about the road funding category, and I'm going to start just with this fix-it box up here. 2 elements. One has to do with indexing the gas tax, and as you know, the gas tax is losing both revenues and purchasing power from 2 forces. Inflation erodes the purchasing power of the gas tax, and increased fuel efficiency erodes the revenue stream of the gas tax as cars pay less gas tax per mile driven as they get more efficient, and as other cars don't use any gasoline. So we grappled with this, and both of those things combined to erode the usefulness of the gas tax, essentially for maintaining the system. And so every day we're falling behind as we fail to adjust for inflation and for fuel efficiency. Of those two, we believe that fuel efficiency in the future will probably be the larger impact, the federal fuel efficiency standards are met going forward, and we have an increasing number of electric and hybrid vehicles on the roads. The loss of revenue to fuel efficiency will accelerate. Inflation is expected to remain relatively low in coming years, though who knows. We were able to achieve unanimous support for indexing in the coalition and the board. For indexing for fuel efficiency. And so that's what you see before you today. What I've got up on the screen here is 1 page of an issue, or 1 graph out of an issue paper that was developed during the process, the Oregon Transportation Forum's process. This is part of a paper on indexing that you can find on the Oregon Transportation Forum's website. That address is on the bottom of the back page of this thing, but it's just OregonTransportationForum.com. And we have a page on there called the document sharing page, and that's where you can find this paper. So I just the point here is that we've had a 10% increase or so in fuel efficiency just in the last 10 or 12 years for the overall U.S. fleet. Now this is a national number, but we assume that while the actual fuel efficiency of the Oregon fleet may differ slightly from the actual fuel efficiency of the national fleet, the trend of increasing efficiency is probably pretty similar. There is a federal index that we could use to index index to fuel efficiency going forward. There are lots of other ways you can do this to avoid losing ground to increased efficiency, but we present this to you for your consideration. I'll just go to the next bullet. This is the big ticket item in the fix-it road funding box, which is just generally money for maintenance. We did have earlier in the process some sort of illustrative dollar figures associated with this request in terms of how much gas tax, how much registration fee would raise, how much money. And we elected as a coalition not to actually pick a number. Just know that there are great needs around the state, and you will undoubtedly hear from AOC and LOC, who have done some surveys of their members around to figure out what the magnitude of those needs are. They're definitely into the nine figures, and I won't get any more specific than that. We figure this is a question that you as legislators are going to need to grapple it with as you decide what, you know, is doable in the art of the possible. And so we didn't want to specify too closely.
Thank you.
I'll hand it over to Drew.
Thanks, Randy. Chair McCune, committee members, Drew Hagedorn appearing today on behalf of the Oregon Transportation Forum. I'm going to speak to that upper right quadrant of the matrix on page 3. But before I get to the specifics of our proposal, I thought I'd do a couple of introductory remarks about non-roadway funding. Obviously, when we're talking about road funding, bridges and roads, we have a dedicated source of funding, state funding that is, in the form of the Highway Trust Fund and the gas taxes and other things that capitalize that account. The same really is not true on the non-roadway side, and I'll speak specifically to transit in this context. Transit, for example, really only has a couple of dedicated resources to capitalize the services from the state vantage point. It's a small amount that comes from the cigarette tax, as well as a small amount from the so-called lawnmower fund, which is the tax revenues that aren't related to vehicles and things like that when you fill up your gas tank for your lawnmower or something of that ilk. So it doesn't really aggregate to all that much state funding. And I think if the advocates were before us, and I guess I'm one of them on the transit side representing the Oregon Transit Association, we'd say that the transit sector and non-roadway generally actually do provide a very significant state benefit. Think, for example, of providing the opportunity for an elderly Oregonian to age in their home rather than having to go to a long-term care facility, for example, where the cost to the state, to the extent the state was paying for that, would be substantially higher than funding transit needs for those folks to get to the goods and services, the doctor's office, et cetera, that they need. We ultimately, the holy grail for non-roadway would be to identify a dedicated state source of funding. The gas tax, of course, is earmarked by the Highway Trust Fund exclusively for roads. In many other states, transit, for example, is funded by a sales tax. Neither of those finance mechanisms are available to us here. And so that's why transit and non-roadway generally really has to bootstrap together resources to fund the services that we provide throughout the state. And because oftentimes we aren't able to do that, we leave, for example, matching federal resources on the table. We don't provide the services that we otherwise could. And so that's why I think downstream you'll see us come forward with some kind of a proposal to take care of a dedicated source of funding. But in the interim, we have greatly appreciated the earmarks that this committee and your revenue committee and the Ways and Means Committee and the Assembly more broadly have provided for non-roadway transportation infrastructure. And you'll see in that upper right quadrant three items that we're suggesting you consider. And obviously these numbers in some respects are a little aspirational because we're talking predominantly about general fund resources and we recognize that there's a lot of competition for those. But to begin, on the rail side of the equation, you see a recommendation there for the $22.6 million that would be required to continue that Amtrak service between Eugene and Vancouver, British Columbia. We have the rail cars. They're new. I think a lot of you have been briefed on that issue. I know the transit division at ODOT has probably fanned out and met with a lot of you as well. We think we ought not leave those resources on the table and that we ought to continue funding that service. That's on the rail side. On the transit side, you'll see two proposals there. The elderly and disabled transit services, we're recommending $75 million per year there, and you'll see in parens that traditionally we've gotten around the $10 million mark. That may be more of an aggregate number. Up until the last biennia, we were getting more like $2 million. A couple of biennia prior, we received $10 million. This past time, we received almost 13 in several different appropriations, and we're grateful for that. We put it to good use, provide that critical service, again, to connect seniors and the disabled to their community and between communities. But again, going back to my earlier comments about a need for a dedicated sources funding, if you look on that second page under principles, one of the line items, that third one, is to provide a reliable source of funding that's stable and predictable. And while general fund earmarks really greatly help and are absolutely essential, that dedicated source of funding would allow non-roadway entities to be more planful about their futures in the transit sector, for example, to expand service permanently, knowing that there would be a revenue stream to support that. Lastly, we have there $20 million earmarked for youth access to transit. And some of you were potentially around or read about the debate concerning the business energy tax credit. A portion of the business energy tax credit actually was utilized for the then called student bus program. And that was one of the casualties of the Betsy reform to get control of that program, the cost overruns that were eroding the state's general fund. We didn't disagree with that, and the state kind of ratcheted us down over time because a number of our transit districts really grew to rely upon that to a certain extent in Portland and Eugene and here even in Salem. This is an idea to kind of bring that back, to have the opportunity to have our young people utilizing transit early in their lives to get to and from school where they don't have yellow bus service. That's true in certain areas of Eugene. That's also true in the Portland metropolitan area, as many of you know. And also just to be able to get our youth accustomed to utilizing those. We know from research from the auto industry that youth aren't as interested in running out and getting their driver's license when they turn 16 like I was. I would have done it at 12 if they would have left. But they're
early
not
adopter.
That way.
We call that.
Our urban areas, that's true. We felt that this was a prudent investment as well. It was a program that was wildly successful. It just fell prey to the Betsy reforms. So I'd leave that for your consideration on the non-roadway side under the fix-it category, and I'll pass it back over to Mr. Tucker, who's going to talk about the road funding side of the enhanced program.
So you see two items in this enhanced road funding box. One of them is simply increase the gas tax or somehow come up with some revenues to help to build new facilities. And just there's not much more to say about that, except that just for calibration purposes, so you know, a penny of gas tax raises about 26 point some odd million dollars when you total up both the gas tax revenues and the truck's share of the cost responsibility after the cost responsibility formula is run. So a nickel is maybe $130 million, et cetera. So just so you know, 2 cents is 53 or 52 million, et cetera. So I think that's pretty self-explanatory. I will note, I've got this page up here. This is from the website of a national organization called Transportation for America, and I can provide the link to your staff. It's just a summary of what's going on. I'll just show you. It's a summary of what's going on in all these different states in terms of revenue proposals that have been introduced. Goes all the way down to Washington. And I will note for the record that our neighboring states of Idaho and Washington are considering pretty large transportation packages right now. The Senate in Washington has proposed an 11.7 cent gas tax increase. And in Idaho, there's a proposal for an 8 cent gas tax increase plus an additional increase of a penny a year going forward. Obviously, these are just proposals. They haven't been adopted. But the magnitude is notable in both of those states, and I just wanted to mention that for your chomping on. And finally, the Orphan Highway program is this would be a new. This is a new idea. There's a lot of interest in this around the state, mainly coming from local governments. The problem that it is meant to address is this: in many communities, there are state highways that pass through their communities and really function more as local roads than as through routes. And ODOT has sort of a hierarchy of highways: federal, statewide, regional and district highways. And many of these regional, or some of these regional and district highways, are these kinds of facilities that just go through local communities. In the Portland region, a couple examples are Powell Boulevard, which is State Highway 26, and 82nd Avenue, which is State Highway 213, and there are others. Often they are the lowest priority for investment by ODOT, because ODOT's primary mission is to facilitate through traffic and not to not sort of community building at the local level. So there are frequent conversations between the local governments and ODOT about how to make these facilities work better for the local communities. One of the solutions that has been proposed and discussed quite extensively since we've been going through this process is jurisdictional transfers, where you'd basically align the ownership of the facility with the use of the facility. And so if it's really functioning as a local street, it would be owned locally. The problem is that in many cases there's deferred maintenance on these facilities, and so the local government isn't willing to take on a facility that's in substandard condition that needs either paving or has to be brought up to urban standards or requires other kinds of investments over the long term. There's no money that comes with those transfers. You know, you still have your 50-30-20 state, county, city formula that's not based on lane miles. These transfers they stagnate. So what's needed is a pot of money to help facilitate those transfers, and basically to invest in these facilities and make them less of a liability for the receiving jurisdiction. Now, I should say, it's not all in the direction I just described. It's not all local governments wishing to take over state facilities. There are some instances where there are local facilities that might serve better as a state facility because they really are through routes. And I think the one that I've heard the most about is Cornelius Pass Road up in, I guess it's owned by Multnomah County. I'm sure there are others in other parts of the state. I'm just not conversant about them. And so this proposal is for a pilot program, see how this works, provide a penny a year, and some legislators, I believe, are thinking bigger, because the penny, as I said, raises about $26 million, and it's a pretty large problem around the state. So we would put a sunset on it to see how it worked, or at least our proposal is to put a sunset on it. There's a policy paper I can provide to you that was not adopted by the OTF, but sort of underlies this proposal, which lays out a concept of creating a governing body that includes all the stakeholders to these transactions, local governments, ODOT, transportation stakeholders, local communities, et cetera, that would help to make decisions about, you know, prioritizing these kinds of investments. So that's the Orphan Highways request. Really could go into the fix-it category. It's not really, doesn't really matter whether it's in enhance or fix-it.
Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Would you call this program an orphanage?
It's more about adoption, I think.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. It is Friday afternoon. Yes. We're acknowledging that it is Friday afternoon.
That was good.
Right. The current state of affairs is the orphanage, right?
Thank you, Mr. Tucker.
Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Tucker on this?
Chair McKeon, with your leave, I'll go ahead and round out the enhanced category. Again, yep. Drew Hagedorn for the Transportation Forum. We talked a little bit about two principal funding sources for transportation infrastructure, the Highway Trust Fund and the General Fund. The last one that we've frequently utilized, or the legislature has utilized, is the lottery. And that's been principally displayed in your work on Connect Oregon. This has been, I think, for most transportation stakeholders, a critical funding tool for all modes, which is one of the principles of the Transportation Forum. And we would recommend that this body consider bringing that funding amount back up to $100 million per biennia. It's vacillated up and down. Obviously, we've been in an extended period of a recessionary economy, and you've struggled with your budgets through that time. As we bounce back out of that, we'd like to take a look at bouncing the number up with that recovery up to that $100 million mark. Obviously, we saw a forecast the other day. We'll see forecasts along the way, and this number will vacillate based on the state's means. But I can't underscore anymore that this is such an important program. And I know it's been critical to transit, but when you look at air and rail, marine, bicycle, ped, all the other modes, it's just been a real key component of financing our transportation infrastructure needs. Lastly, Randy and I and Craig can talk a little bit about some of the policy proposals that are before you, and that's this last bar of the matrix. You'll see kind of two general categories. That first bullet really hits on the planning phase of things and a demonstrable statement of need we can communicate to the public about why these investments are necessary. So that's a look ahead. And the other two, I think, kind of connect to an efficiency theme. Where can we be saving our precious resource dollars so that we can put the money where it needs to go? So you have a couple of focal points there on the planning side, on the interconnection of the various modes. How do we link them in a way that makes smooth transition and an efficient use of our resources. And then lastly, you know, co-locating of ODOT facilities, both with local and other road maintenance facilities, we felt was a prudent thing for you to consider as a policy measure to maximize that taxpayer dollar. So with that, I'd invite the others on the panel to engage on the policy issues or take any questions before Mr. Campbell wraps things up for the panel.
Representative Benz.
Thank you. And Drew, you said something about telling the public, communicating with the public in your last few. What do you mean by that? Taking the need to the public. Who does that?
Chairman Kuhn, Representative Benz, I think that's a good question. I think we presented before this committee before where that topic arose. I think it's incumbent upon all of us. Certainly, all of us are communicating with our various industry associations. I have two clients that have prominently participated in this issue, Associated General Contractors and the Oregon Transit Association. And we are constantly out in our communities with our statewide footprint talking about this issue. We, as a forum, have also talked about some targeted survey research to check the appetite of taxpayers, but we recognize the need to really foment in the public the notion that we need to be investing in transportation, and with that comes the need for additional investment. And I'd invite Randy or Craig to join me in adding or enhancing or correcting what I just said.
Well, I would just add one comment. We understand, here we are, you know, sitting in front of you, asking you to, you know, approve a package of investments and frankly, revenues. To address our transportation needs. We also understand that it's not entirely your responsibility. At the local level, you know, we have a very highly articulated conversation about transportation, and as you know, there have been ballot measures and proposed fees at the local level, and one, in fact, just adopted last week, I believe, in the city of Hillsborough. To increase revenues locally. We certainly understand that it's a shared responsibility in the system, and I know that while the regional transportation table in the Portland region, which is called JPAC, the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, has endorsed this package that's coming to you exactly as we've brought it to you as well. They're also continuing a conversation about how to raise revenues locally. And obviously, that involves a lot of communication, Representative Benz, with our local citizens. And it's a challenging conversation, as you know, but it's one that has to happen.
Yes, sir.
So to get to the point, how much money do you guys have in your budgets if we decide on a package to go out and sell it?
Madam Chair, Representative, as Randy was speaking, I thought of what I should have said initially, which is I think the members of this organization, and I know I'm very proud of one of my clients, AGC, have always risen to the occasion to stand up and not finish our work at the end of the session, but to continue that work in the event that what you propose and approve is referred to the voters. And that happened in the package back, was it 01, that package?
There was, or was it 12.
Mr. Campbell.
How did that happen?
In the 09 package, we also
help yourself, an awful lot
to prevent that from getting to the ballot box. So I would say that all of us stand behind you. We did some fundraising, of course, to do the education symposium, and we can continue conversations about this the issue that you raise. We recognize the last thing we want to do is to ask you to take a difficult vote potentially in your district and then not be there to stand behind you if this makes its way to the ballot box, which we hope it doesn't, but we have to be planning for that inevitability.
Thank you. Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Chair. And I appreciate Representative Benson's question. To drill down on that a little more, my concern is not support potentially after session, but support now, because other than a discussion occurring in the largest city of the state, which hasn't gone particularly well, and some discussions in one of our larger counties, Washington County, which didn't go so well, I don't know if the public understands the need at this point. And we certainly do our part at educating them, but without a concerted effort beyond the really incredible policy work and time and commitment that the transportation reform has put in, which I'm incredibly thankful for, then translating that into a communications plan to tell the public what the need is and the situation that we're coming up on. I mean, maybe the roads aren't haven't been destroyed yet in some counties and the bridges haven't fallen down yet, but the public needs to understand what could happen in the next few years without action. So I would implore you to don't wait until the session's over. Now, please.
Representative McLean.
Well, first of all, thank you very much. I've been waiting for this. It's only taken 3 weeks for us to get here, and I thought your proposal was going to be the most important thing that I heard at the beginning of the session. And it is, and I really thank you for all the work and all the energy and everything that's gone into it. I asked to be on this committee, and there was one reason, and that was because I wanted to try and help with the transportation package. And I agree with the last two speakers, education is key. And even though if you've ever worked on a transportation project, and you know the cost of a transportation project, the cost of materials, and the length to get a large project done, which is usually 25 years. And 25 years ago, I said we'd get a third lane out to Hillsborough, and I think we're going to make it. And you have to keep going. You have to keep making sure you've got somebody there that's going to follow you out that's going to help with those. So I'm here to help with this. That's what I have as a goal. But I agree with the two questions that were asked right before me, and that is one of your principles is preserve local options. And I heard one of you say that you guys were ready to give this to us. It's something you're ready to hand off. And so the conversation around local options that you had in your forum is going to be really important to us, not just because of maybe the lack of success of local options, but also what folks there are thinking about doing in connection with our package or as part of our package, because the coordination of that is extraordinarily important. And so we can do it. We can have a transportation package, but if we all go out to do our own thing at the same time, well, then we've got other issues. And so I was wondering if you wanted to elaborate a little bit on that particular principle and also on some of the conversations about what do the words preserve local option really mean.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, ultimately, we have a transportation system that has a portion of it that is state and a portion of it that is local. Mm-hmm. To the extent that you prevent local governments from doing what they need to make sure that their citizens are well served by their transportation system, the system as a whole is not well served. Mm-hmm. So making sure that local decisions can be carried out by local folks without interference at the state level is a pretty important principle that we're pursuing. You won't see any particular item within the proposals that dictate that. Mm-hmm. However, I think it's important that we reflect, and this goes back to the point that was raised by Representative Davis and Representative Bentz. We have to be able to articulate to folks at the local level whether or not their commute is going to get better, whether or not the bus service that they haven't been able to enjoy would be available, whether or not you can get from one community to another to get your doctor's appointment, where you are limited now from being able to do that. We have to be able to articulate to the local level and the folks who are at the ground level, what is the benefit to them going to be? If we can't do that, we've fundamentally failed to address why we need to have a transportation funding package. Now, I will say one of the things you don't see here is a 2-cent proposal or a 3-cent proposal or a 4-cent proposal. Part of that is because there's a political matrix that has to be gone through to determine what is possible this session. But it also is because we who are advocating for a transportation funding package have to be able to articulate clearly so that you can take it back to your constituents and so that we can explain it to the public, what will we specifically be doing with this money? Not that we need more money for transit, not that we need to expand our highways to reduce congestion, not that we need more rail service, but whether or not what I do when I get out of my house and go to where I have to go to for employment or where I go to the grocery store, whether or not that's going to be improved. Mm-hmm. Or whether or not I, as a trucking company, am going to have to circumnavigate 40 miles out of my way because I have a weight-restricted bridge. So those are the things that we have yet to bring forward to you, and it is incumbent upon us to do so. However, we are handing off the most important part, I think. We've done our part to bring to you what we can agree on as stakeholders. And while we are not going to stand idly back and not participate in the discussion, we know it's now your job to do the process of determining what you can do as legislation this time around. Now, we are providing you with an LC draft, LC 2870. We know that you may choose to use that as a vehicle, or you may choose an entirely different vehicle from what we've proposed. And we know that that is your job. Our job, at least at this point in time, is done by way of coming up with a proposal. So I do want to thank those of you who are, thank you for being willing to serve on this committee because you have a lot of work ahead of you. I also want to thank those of you who are in the legislature who came to our OTF meetings, Representative Gorsuch, Representative McCune, and Representative Lively, and there were others as well. And Representative Davis, you were there for a couple of events.
Yes, he was.
The participation was very much appreciated because you gave us vital insight.
Don't forget Patrick, who came to every meeting.
The hero.
I cannot say enough thanks for Patrick because not only did he come, but he took detailed notes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, he did.
Detailed notes of every meeting. Every meeting. So.
I own stock in a pen and ink company, Madam Chair.
We may need to subsidize that at some point. Right.
Are you declaring a conflict of interest?
Representative Hack and Representative Lively have quoted. Well, did you want to let him finish, or did you have something germane to what he's saying right now? No, go ahead, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. So, I'm wondering if the enhancement piece is going to be addressed more clearly in the LC, which I'm assuming it will be, because in looking at the package, which thank you so much for all of your work, very much appreciated, seems to be geared a lot toward larger communities and the metropolitan area when you look at a lot of the dollars being spent on transit services, Amtrak going from Eugene to Vancouver, and even the Restore Connect Oregon. Not a lot of that is going to the outskirts, to the rural communities, to the east side, to anyway, I'm just curious if what the thoughts are on that, because I too, like Representative Davis, am a big one on the communication piece and what we have to arm ourselves out with our constituents. So can you expand at all on that for us, or is that something that's going to come later by way of LCs being drafted and stuff, that we're going to have a more comprehensive idea of how this is going to go across the state? Because that concerns me.
Madam Chair, Representative Hack, one thing that I'll point out, and it's specifically dealing with the transit services for the elderly and disabled, that is really looking at everywhere in the state. Because one of the challenges you have, for instance, if you happen to be living on the coast, you may live 20 miles from the community that has your doctor's office or has some specific need. You, when you're elderly and disabled, you wish to get to that service, but there's no transit provision for that. You can't get there. It's like the last mile. What this funding is designed to do is try to make monies available so that those communities can start creating those networks and linkages. It won't look like a rail system. It won't look like light rail. It'll look like a van that you can come by, pick you up, take you where you want to go, and bring you back again. As far as the enhanced side of things, the distribution formula spreads it out throughout the state. So every city and county gets a certain portion of whatever we raise at the state level for their use. In addition to that, the money that's raised at the state level is used for all of the state highways throughout the state. So you probably won't see much more detail about how that money is going to be used. There's always that challenge between whether or not when the legislature adopts a transportation funding package, are there certain issues, certain problems throughout the state that need to raise to the level where they're specifically mentioned in the bill, or whether or not it's just the general funding to go to throughout the system. So you won't see a lot of detail in the LC draft. In fact, what you'll see at this point in time are blanks.
I'd like to just add another thing. You mentioned, Representative Hack, you mentioned Connect Oregon. Connect Oregon has traditionally included a distribution formula of the 100% of whatever the amount is in a given session. 10% goes to each of the five ODOT regions, and then the other 50% is sort of at large, you know, distributed. So there's definitely a focus on making sure that every part of the state gets some of that money. Another way to think about it is that really some of those investments happen to be in one place, but they may serve a different place. So an example, I know from an earlier Connect Oregon, there was investment in a grain transshipment facility at the Port of Portland. The investment was in Portland, but it wasn't serving Portland. It was serving the areas of the state that grow grain. And so, you know, there definitely are benefits. And, you know, when you're talking about transportation system, you are talking about connecting places. There are benefits that accrue around the state, even though they may not be investments that are made around the state.
One follow-up? Then, which is great. I'm glad you have all that information, and I appreciate that immensely. That's going to be really important to be communicated. And that was also stated to the commissioner when he came from ODOT, and we talked about having a communication plan built in with his strategic plan, because people do not know that. And so the misconception is that just certain pods are reached and people are left out, and so we've got to communicate the message.
Point taken. Thank you.
Representative Lively, did you?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And they've heard me say this before. I obviously am very supportive that we need to be doing something, and I wish we had done it long before now. But the problem, and this goes back to kind of the communication thing, the problems within our communities and our counties and our state is financial needs for a lot of other public services besides roads, and that's where roads in often cases gets overlooked. Because if you try to argue with the citizens what's more important, public schools or roads, they're going to go on to public schools, and as you all are struggling. So I'm going to reinforce, we collectively have got to get our act together and get out there sooner than later, whether we've got the package or not, to really start talking more about the message and how these things are linked, and especially our economy. But the other part of it, you know, right now in our county, we're voting on a doubling of the vehicle registration fee. Now, if our county votes to double the registration fee, and we, part of our package is a doubling of the fee, I can tell you people in Lane County aren't going to do it. That could kill the whole package. And so this is how we coordinate with the locals and give them some assurances that we in the state will produce is becoming more and more critical, because they're also at the same position we are in the state. Things are crumbling, and they're looking at whatever sources they might to. So it's incumbent upon all of us. But that connection back to the local governments and how we support them and don't preempt them to me is a vital one, or we'll be loggerheads.
I thank you all for your comments. Any more comments or questions for the panel? Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you guys for your work. You guys can share with us your thinking on today as compared to the JTA year, where we had a governor who had taken 2 years, I think, to get a package going. And there had been quite a bit, if I recall correctly, of talk about it, a lot of notoriety, a lot of discussion. We don't have that this time. What we have is what you guys have done, and thank goodness for that. But I can't help but notice, I was just going through and counting of the 43 groups here, well over half is our governments. And so I thought for a moment that perhaps you, in fact, I still do, that you'd be using this list as a foundation for getting the word out as to whether or not the need is so great as to prompt the public to support this. But I asked earlier how large your budgets were when it came to getting the message out this time, because we don't have that leadership that we had 7 years ago or whenever that was. We just don't. It's you guys. So I'm really
pressure.
You're very important, but you're not the governor, and so that leadership is. I'm asking you guys if you think it makes a difference. If you think we're starting out behind, where do you think we are compared to 6 or 7 years ago?
Madam Chair, Representative Vance, there's no question that we are later in the game than we were in 2009. And in addition, quite frankly, we've had some recent history in transportation that has made this discussion delayed in happening. For instance, the Columbia River crossing, because that took up a lot of time and a lot of effort, it prevented the conversation that happened in 2008. Leading into 2009. And that was actually the reason why the OTF decided to have this discussion. We weren't really designed for it. As a matter of fact, I should point out that our executive director, Pam Levitt, who has been working way over time, we spent an inordinate amount of time over the last year doing this because there really wasn't an apparatus like we had back in 2008. It didn't have the public eye, much like it would have happened if you have a governor promoting what's going on at that point, like Governor Kulongoski did back in 2008. That doesn't mean that there isn't time yet for us to continue to work through our membership to get the word out to folks. Now, a lot of that is local governments and getting word out to our local governments, our county commissioners, our city council members, and giving them the opportunity to talk about how important this is. It is more difficult to identify what the media will do about these proposals. There has been some following of what we've been doing through some of the articles that we've seen, but by no means is there that kind of groundswell of discussion. And so that still needs to happen. And the work that we will be doing to try to identify what does the public really need and getting that word out and equipping that for all of you is still yet to be done. And it is expensive. It's not an easy thing to do, and it does take time. So, but we are working in that direction.
Representative McLean.
Well, to that point, and I'll make it really quick, but I think it's so important. When we try to talk about transportation and you're comparing it to education, it's a really hard sell. But if you start talking about youngsters and people in state and your children and grandchildren having good jobs and how it's tied to the economy and how we're going to have stronger families, so it really is making it connected. Transportation seems cold and just something out there that most people don't work on. So even though they have to deal with congestion, those types of things, if we can connect it to economy and to our families, you know, all the better.
I think this is I was waiting to see if we touched on all the questions that I thought would come up during this wonderful presentation that you've given us, and I think we've touched on all, but one that I would like to revisit, and I think I brought it up during the forum, and we barely skimmed the surface of it when you touched on Connect Oregon. Connect Oregon is a very important piece of how we do a lot of critical work around this state. It has been funded at a lower level for the last couple of go-rounds. It's been constrained because of the budgetary challenges that we have faced. I'm hopeful that that will not be the case in the future. But one of the things that I would like to have a conversation about, you touched on transit and consistent sorts of funding for transit. One of the things that we tend to leave out is a consistent source of funding for those intermodal pieces of infrastructure, rail, air, marine, that are the job creators for this state. And when you talk about jobs with a big J, family wage jobs, those are the pieces of infrastructure that move freight and actually put people to work in manufacturing and industries that support our rural communities. I know that this package is complete. That has not been a significant piece of how this package was designed, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact that as we look forward, those are critical pieces of infrastructure investment that we need to make. And I think I would just be remiss in not getting on the record that these are important things that we need to continue to think about as we move forward. So I don't know if you want to comment on that or not, but it tends to get left out, and I didn't hear a lot about it in this conversation.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for bringing that to your attention, because we actually discussed that quite a bit in the Transportation Forum. If Oregon is going to continue to grow economically and be competitive in the world market, one of the number one things we have to have in place is the ability to move freight through our system. And that system has got to link between air, highways, rail, marine. If those are not in place, we can't grow the economy. And so that's one of the things about Connect Oregon that has been so critical. It was the one way that we have had historically to enhance projects that make that development possible. So it's a critical element of this proposal. And we have been remiss if we have not mentioned that before now, because it must be part of what we do if we're going to continue Oregon moving and growing its economy.
Great, thank you. I also wanted to thank Ms. Leavitt and thank Mr. Brennan for their good work as this project unfolded. This took a lion's share of effort on the part of all of you. I'm very grateful for the work that you've done, as I believe this entire panel is. And I don't know if you want to take a minute and introduce who's in the room here. I know you have a number of your stakeholders and your participants here. And if you'd like to get on the record who took the time to come here on a beautiful Friday afternoon, it might be nice to give them an opportunity to be on the record.
Madam Chair, because I am deathly afraid of getting somebody's name wrong, would you indulge me and allow me to have them introduce themselves?
I would be more than happy to.
Greg Leo, representing the city of Wilsonville and Mount Hood Meadow ski area.
Great. Thank you for being here, sir.
Really?
Just go on and continue. Yeah.
Chris Lyons, Clackamas County.
Great.
Daniel Hauser, Association of Oregon Counties.
Rocky Donald, Bertonica Turpin, Oregon Economic Development Association.
Bruce Beverly, City of Portland.
Michael Eisen, Associated General Contractors.
You're next, Paul.
Eric, you primate.
Mike Freeze with AOI.
Craig Honeyman, League of Oregon Cities.
Thank you. I think we have.
And ODOT is a member.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be here. Truly, we watched this for months and months and months and participated as best we can. And the work that's gone in is greatly appreciated, very, very well respected. And we're happy to have you here to present this to us today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. And now we will move on to studded tires.
Perfect day for that conversation.
Perfect day for studded tires.
Yes, indeed.
Mr. Hather, thank you for being here today. I know effort has gone into this study. It was an issue in the last session. It's an issue in this session, and we're happy to have some current new information. So thank you for joining us.
Good. Madam Chair, Member of the Committee. Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for ODOT, here on a sunny Friday afternoon talking about studded tires. Quite a season even to be talking about studded tires, given the lack of snow we've had the entire season. You know, throughout my career, it seems like every session we talk about studded tires, and I'm up here talking about studded tires again. I know last time we had several bills that were in front of this committee talking about studded tires and with various proposals. We talked about maybe doing a study that was a fairly comprehensive study looking at not just studded tires, but the environmental aspects and some of the other mitigation that can be done to eliminate or reduce the amount of studded tires that were out there. When we concluded the session last time, at least I concluded that coming up here every session and talking to you about a study that was done in 2000 based on data that was as old as 1994 or 1995, and knowing this conversation wasn't going to go away, it was in our best interest to at least refresh the basic data and go back to that 2000 study and just take a look at not as comprehensive as a study that was proposed last session, but at least some of that base data to at least arm me as I'm sitting here at the table talking to you with some of that basic data. We have a federal research program in ODOT. We use federal funds to do research on a number of different things, and so we took some of that money and did an update to the 2000 study. Tried to mirror the same approach that we did in 2000 so we could again compare how things have changed, how the landscape has changed since 2000. One of the first things we did is just a literary review. So what else has been going on since 2000 in other states, in other countries? We looked at Japan, we looked at the Scandinavian countries, we looked at Alaska, Washington, Vermont, many other studies from around the world over the last 15 years. Really didn't find anything too surprising to us. Studded tires, again, as we've been talking about, have a benefit at a fairly narrow range. At that freezing temperature our freezing level just below freezing in icy conditions, studded tires do have a benefit. They perform relatively poorly on especially concrete pavement during wet conditions. And some of the new technology that is out there called studless tire have some better performance characteristics that have been developed as technology has developed over the last 15 years. One of the major focuses of the study was to update the actual numbers of people that are using studded tires. We asked Portland State to conduct a phone survey that was regionally relevant around the state. So it wasn't just a statewide study, but it was broken out into our five regions of the state. In 95, we showed in the study of about a 16% usage rate of vehicles in the state. In the study that Portland State did this time, that has dropped significantly. It's dropped to 4%, and that was probably the biggest eye-opening thing that we saw in this update to the study is just how much the usage of studded tires have dropped during the last now 20 years since the original data was collected. As you look at Western Oregon, that's where we've seen the biggest drop in the use of studded tires. That ranges from about 1% to 3%. In the Portland area, it's around the 3% number. As you move south to Medford in Southern Oregon, it's closer to that 1% number. East of the Cascades, we have not seen as much reduction, but that range currently is about 11 to 13% of the vehicles use studded tires. If you look at the amount of vehicles in the state that use studded tires, it's approximately 125,000 vehicles use studded tires in the state based on our study. One of the interesting questions we asked in the phone survey and what we found out in the phone survey was those people that stopped using studded tires, 50% of them, of the people that are using studded tires, about 50% of them have been using studded tires for at least 10 years. And we didn't ask these questions, but it gets you thinking about other dynamics that you see changing in the world of transportation and how the new generation coming into transportation is using the system differently, wanting modal choices, not driving, not getting a driver's license later. It follows that trend in the studded tires. At least it gets you thinking that it's following that same trend in studded tires where the younger drivers are not tending to use studded tires. In general, when people put studded tires on, they run them through the full season. It's not something they put on for a few weeks and take back off. In general, they run them for the entire season. When we ask people, so why'd you stop using studded tires? So those people that stop using, why did they stop? 35% of the people said they just don't need them anymore. 12% said they switched to some of the new technology studless tires. Another 12% said, I have a four-wheel drive or an SUV. And you think about back in 95, mm-hmm. SUVs just weren't as popular as they have grown during the last 20 years. 12% of the people say they just don't drive in bad weather, and 9% said I don't do it because of the damage to the roads. When we look at the damage to the system and try to come up with a number of, so how much damage do studded tires do to our pavements? It gets a little complicated, but we try to look at so what damage the studded tires do that prematurely cause us to go out there and do pavement. I mean, clearly, in the past report and all the research we've done, studded tires do damage to the roadway. But there's other things that do damage to the roadway, too. Mother Nature, just through freeze-thaw, through rain, potholes, cracks, pavements wear out. And we try to zero in on the specific sections of pavement where studded tires were the reason we were going back and doing the repaving of the road. It wasn't because of some other reason. We sorted all those out in our system. There was about $8.5 million annually that we do work to rehabilitate those pavements because of studded tire damage. That represents almost 10% of our total pavement budget would be for those pavements. Interesting, though, when you look at where is $8.5 million damage focused? What part of the state? What part of the system do we find those in? And there's really only two places in the state that about 95% of that damage is focused on. It's not in far eastern Oregon, even though that's where the usage rate is the highest in the state. But because volumes are so low in that part of the state, the pavement is usually worn out through other factors and not through studded tires. It's not in southern Oregon. Again, the usage rate down there is about 1%. It's really concentrated in two areas, in the Portland metro area, mm-hmm. where you have about 3% and extremely high volumes, and in central Oregon, where you have relatively high volumes but high usage rate. And about 95% of that $8.5 million is basically in the central Oregon area and in the Portland Portland metro area. Just a couple clarifying points about the study. The study we did was focused just on the state system, not on the local system. So the numbers I'm citing are based on the state system. The cost of the study was $125,000. $72,000 of that was for the phone survey that Portland State did. So again, we tried to do a fairly condensed, just a refresh of what we conducted in 2000, just to give us a better, stronger basis to have a conversation for this session and upcoming discussions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And policy, to have this right, it's older people in Portland that are causing the problem.
Could be. Very good.
I don't think I need to say much more.
No. I'm curious about the passes. If you concentrated in central and Portland, is it going over Mount Hood and going over McKenzie Pass?
Are you seeing
that damage also, or is it not?
Yeah, Madam Chair, we see some in the Mount Hood area, but in the other mountain passes, we don't see as much of the damage. So I think linking that central Oregon area and that Portland area kind of lines up with that. Yeah.
And the technology is changing. I'm a consumer of the new all-weather tires. I like them very much. I'm able to drive in the snow with them very effectively with an appropriate vehicle. Do you see that changing in the future and the demise of the studded tire at some point where people will just age out of that technology?
Well, Madam Chair, it was really fascinating kind of going back and look at the 2000 study and the assumptions that were in there, the assumptions around VMT continuing to grow, the assumptions around studded tires continuing to grow. And looking back on that 15 years later, it's almost kind of laughable about the assumptions that we're making. So for me to sit here today and predict the future for the next 10 or 15 years and all the change that we see in transportation, the generational change we see and just driver patterns and everything else, I think it's a little difficult to predict. But clearly, we got two data points on a trend line that shows from a 16% number to a 4% number in the usage rate. That's a pretty dramatic trend that you see in direction, especially in western Oregon, of the less use of studded tires.
Great. Further questions? Thank you so much. We appreciate your good work. Mr. Brennan, Monday.
Monday, Madam Chair, is Vehicle Dealer Association Day. We have bills up that are part of the package of bills that we introduced during the interim for the Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association.
Exciting.
And then Wednesday, we're doing Transit Day.
All right. Anything for the good of the order?
Today, we're doing Transit Day.
All right. Anything for the